Welcome, everyone, to the Energy Advisors Podcast. I'm your host, Rex, that energy guy. Glad to have you with us today, no matter where you're listening in around the globe or what time you're listening. It's exciting. We now have listeners in 15 countries, so it's pretty good. I am so excited about today's guest because, well, I've been trying to get her on the show for quite some time, but more importantly, her topic is really in my lane in regards to residential solar. So we have with us today, Zoe Gaston, and I'll get a full introduction in a minute. But before we go there, I just always want to remind people, hey, life is busy. We don't always have time to catch every episode or everything we're subscribed to. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to the last episode, number 65, it was, hey, stop it, industry, about the misinformation of the history of EVs versus combustion engine vehicles, because a lot of people don't know that EVs have been around since the 1890s, 1880s. So interesting stuff. Okay. Then we always have to thank our partners in the show, our friends over at Power Solar, one of the largest organizations in the United States, delivering solar to both residents and business in 23 states. And listen, the reason I partner with them is really simple. They will work with you to get the exact solution that you want. They don't just come to you and say one size fits all. So panels to converters and inverters, charging stations, mass storage, they do it all. They do it all really well. So if you want to get in touch with them, there are notes and contact information at the bottom, or you can go to our website and select get in touch with them, and we will give you information. So that's energyadvisors.today. Our next partner in the show is our friends at Universal Wind Kinetics. Hey, listen, if you have not checked out wind for your home or small business, this stuff is on fire. It is really cool. The advancements in the technology actually make it so for under $5,000, you can get a system that will create as much power as four solar panels. When the wind is blowing, just like everything in this industry, we always have the caveats of, well, that depends. And then our other partner in the show, we are very thankful for our good friends over at Go Green Community Initiative. And I like what they're doing here. It's a nonprofit educational organization that is just out there helping people understand the facts without sales pressure. So if you're interested in conservation, management, or generation of power at your home, they will help you get through the process, no spin, no pressure, get you the facts, because most people don't know what's possible or what's possible right around the corner. So that's it. I want to thank our partners of the show. And of course, you can always get information on them in the show notes or at the website, energyadvisors.today. All right. So enough of all that fun stuff. Let's get on to the real meat and potatoes today. I am so excited to have Zoe Gaston with us today. I would classify her as probably one of the premier analysts in distributed solar, and talk about that. But her official title is principal analyst on the U.S. distributed solar group, their team, and she primarily focuses in residential. Well, we got a lot of people that live in homes, and so this is a very important topic. And then we have a lot of industry professionals that listen to the show. So, Zoe, welcome. Glad to have you with us.
Yeah, Rex, thank you so much for the kind introduction. Thank you for having me on.
Well, I mean, this is so much fun because there's so much happening right now. There's some interesting headwinds that we've seen in residential solar. Lots of programs being announced. There's a lot of confusion out there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of numbers. You know, it's really crazy. And I hate to do this, but I do sometimes. I'll be out there trolling along your favorite social media platform, and you'll see people make these ridiculous statements. And I'm like, too bad you don't know it's the truth, right? And so I have to refrain from commenting on some of those things. So today, I hope we can dispel some of those myths, get some information out there, get the facts, sure. What's going on. So, but before we go there and before we go and understand what Wood Mackenzie does and the position there, tell us a little about Zoe Gaston. Okay. So now you don't have to go back to, I was born this date or mm-hmm. I did this in the third grade. We don't have to go back that far. But what I'd like to know is some pivot points that made you, that kind of helped you get to where you are. maybe some professional history, and then how did you get into the position you're at now as a principal analyst?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, I guess this probably would go back to high school. And I know I had friends in high school and college who knew exactly what they wanted to be when they grew up, whether like a doctor or something
Right.
like that. And I was someone who didn't really know what I wanted to do. So yeah, thinking back to high school, I took an AP environmental science class. So that was something where I was like, oh, this is really interesting. Like maybe, I'll take some more classes on this topic in college.
Okay.
So in college, I ended up being an environmental studies major. Still didn't really know like what I would want to do with that, after college. So
Well,
then I think
that's a broad topic, environmental.
exactly.
Yeah,
Yeah,
okay.
so I really didn't know. So then I think it was maybe junior year, I had taken an economics course focused on renewable energy. And that really piqued my interest even more. Then around the same time, an alumni from my school came to talk to one of my classes about his job at an energy management company. So I reached out to him to learn more about his work. At the same time, I decided to do an independent study on economics and renewable energy with my same professor. And so ultimately, I was able to partner with this company on my independent study, kind of work with them on, designing the syllabus,
Oh,
figuring out
wow.
which books I would read, which was a cool experience. So I was able to build that relationship with the company, ended up working for them full time once I graduated in New York. So the company was GP Renewables and Trading. And so at that time, the company was a little bit more focused on the retail supplier space.
Okay.
And so I joined as a regulatory analyst, kind of focused on, compliance work, helping them purchase renewable energy credits, things like that. Ultimately, the company was acquired multiple times. So most recently in 2019 by Wood Mackenzie.
Okay.
So it's like technically I worked for the same company since graduation. There's just been some changes. So yeah, kind of the end of my work with that original company, I started to work more with renewable generators, with like solar and hydro generators, and realized that I was a little bit more interested in that than working with, more regulatory and compliance work with retail suppliers.
Right.
So, yeah, an opening came up on our US distributed solar team in 2022, so I was able to transfer over.
Fantastic. So, what a journey. Where did you go to school? We always have to plug where you went to school.
Yeah, so I went to Bucknell University,
Okay.
Middle Pennsylvania.
Yep. That was
Yep.
well widely known, and they actually do pretty good in basketball a lot of the
Yeah,
times. Yeah,
exactly.
fantastic. Okay, well, I understand you're out in Colorado. What brought you to Colorado? Was that to work or was, what?
Yeah, more for the lifestyle. When COVID hit in 2020, like many people transitioned to being fully remote, was working out of my small New York City apartment. It was kind of a scary time to be in New York
Yeah.
and realized I actually didn't enjoy living there all that much. I was like, okay, I
Right.
need to make a change. So kind of reset for a few months, went back with my parents, and then I had a sister and a friend out in Colorado. So I decided, I know two people, so why not make a
Yeah.
change? So
It's a wonderful
yes.
place, isn't it? I'm a native, and so, but I did take a wild tour around the country for a while, about 11 years, but came back home.
Oh,
Okay,
good.
well, let's talk about what's going on because there's so much going on with residential solar. And I know you're on the cusp of doing another report here. So, well, you never leave the topic. So, anyway, let's go back and look at 2023, if you don't mind, just because it's fresh in the minds of a lot of people. What did we kind of see across the United States? I mean, what were the number trends looking like? What were some of the headwinds? Maybe some of the issues of impact of net metering? Yeah, let's go down that path a little bit.
Yeah, so 2023 was a unique year for residential solar, to say the least. So on one hand, I mean, there's two different ways to kind of look at how the market fared.
Right.
So I guess one way would be installations. That is, primarily what Wood Mackenzie is looking at. So regarding installations, 2023 was a record year. I think it was about 13% growth compared to 2022. But on the other hand, you can look at the market in terms of like how have installers or sales been compared to the previous year. And so, starting in early 2023, we started to hear reports of, much lower sales across the country, definitely in some bigger states like Texas and Arizona. And this is primarily driven by, interest rates starting to increase in 2022, and just starting, financing rates went up as a result of that. There was, concerns of a recession, so we started to see consumer demand weaken. So I guess to back up and in looking more at like the installation side, like I said, it was a record quarter, or record year for the
Record year.
segment. And a very large driver of that was California. So I had listened to another one of your podcasts, and I know you guys got into it a little bit, but for those who aren't aware, California transitioned to its next iteration of net metering back just about a year ago in April 2023. So that's when NEM 3.0, or it's technically net billing, went into effect, which is basically, a less lucrative compensation structure for customers. So, the value of their exports are worth about 75% less than under the previous version of net metering. So, this increases payback periods for customers and just, makes it less compelling.
Well,
So
I think an interjection there is, because of that, the financial model is dramatically hit, because it, unless you're ready to be able to fork out more money, you might want to go down a lease. There's a lot of issues that impact that. And for, let's just be honest, yes, we all want a cleaner world, but most people have to look at the finances of
Of
solar for
course.
it to work. And so when we went, and well, we well, when California went to net billing rather than net metering, that took a lot of wind out of the sails.
Definitely. So, before that April 15th deadline, we heard about, a huge rush of sales to, qualify customers under the previous version, NEM 2.0. So as a result of that, there's a lag between sales and installations in residential solar. It could be a few quarters. So we saw very strong installations in California through the first three quarters of the year. Q3 in particular was a huge record quarter for the state. So for those of you who aren't aware, California is the largest residential solar state market by far.
By
It's
far.
made up about one third of the whole national market over the past few years. So the dynamics that are happening in California and installation levels are going to impact, the national market as a whole. So I'd say that was probably one of the main drivers of that record year for the national market. Definitely other states did see strong growth last year. Definitely like the Northeast, Illinois, just driven by high retail rates or retail rate increases in those states where even if financing rates were high, installers were still able to provide a strong value proposition for customers. So anyway, yeah, I think overall to answer your question, 2023 was interesting where yes, it was a record year for installations, but at the same time, a lot of installers struggled with sales. We heard a lot of bankruptcies, things like that.
Well, and one thing I don't know if everybody understands is the vast discrepancy of price per kilowatt in different markets. And that also contributes dramatically to the financial model. And that, I mean, what are the rates in Southern California? They're very high.
That's a good question. I don't have them off the top of my head, but yeah,
But
definitely
you
higher than the
much
national
higher.
average.
Natural. What is the national average right now?
Just in terms of like the retail rate.
Yeah, retail rate.
Yeah, so probably like I want to say 13, 14
Yeah,
cents.
yeah. That's what we
Yeah.
see here in Colorado. And then you have some states where it's ridiculously inexpensive, like Idaho and places like that.
Exactly.
So it's very difficult. Okay, so it was an odd year because it's like everybody had this big land rush in California to get signed on. Then it took a while to absorb that through installations, and that's kind of like the snake that eats the whole deer, right? And it's just it's processing. Were there any particular states in the US that passed new laws that would have helped for installations? Because I'll give you a couple examples, all right? So in California, that's the law. When you build a new building, you got to have solar. In Colorado, the new law that went into effect in 23 was solar ready. If you build a new building, you don't have to put the panels on, but you have to do all the pre-wiring for that to accept that. So were there any other states that made some moves, do you think, that impacted the market?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think. To be honest, the only ones that come to mind were, more negative changes.
Right, okay.
Like I know North Carolina, made changes to its net metering structure for the Duke territories. So I guess you could say as a result of that, it wasn't as drastic of a change as California, and North Carolina isn't anywhere near California in terms of market size for solar,
Right.
but you could say that there was still a bit of demand pull-in, if you will, before
Okay.
that change went into effect. I know like Arkansas and Idaho too made changes, more
Right.
negative changes in terms of
Yeah.
net metering.
I mean, didn't Idaho like get rid of net metering then altogether?
Yeah, I'm almost positive they're transitioning to net billing
Net billing,
as
yeah.
of January.
So, if you could, because I don't think I've really gone into this recently, just could you explain real quick the difference between net metering and net billing?
Yeah, definitely. So, both programs compensate solar owners for excess production.
Right.
The difference is more in how they're compensated. So, generally, net metering credits are equal to the retail rate of electricity, or what a utility customer or homeowner pays for electricity, whereas net billing is equal to the wholesale rate. So
Right.
it's, much lower than the retail rate.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that helps people understand that. So we had a surge in the Northeast, Illinois, California to absorb that big market share. Were there any other states that had interesting growth? I mean, I did a ditty a little bit ago about some of the top 10 states, but they tend to be the states that are sort of the leaders already. Like Texas has been, I think Texas has now jumped into one of the lead positions for installations.
Yeah, Texas is definitely one of the lead states, but I'd say that Texas actually had a pretty rough year last year.
Right.
So I don't have the exact percentage, but definitely saw a drop in installation volumes compared to 2022.
Okay.
That state kind of stood out when I would talk to installers. Just about the industry, they would say that they were experiencing a big drop in sales and installations in
Sales and
that state in
installations.
particular.
Okay. So, one of the things that's happening a lot, and I don't know how much you get into this, there's a lot of technology innovation happening in this space right now. In fact, it's almost hard to keep up with it, the things there. Did you see anything in your perspective that you folks look at as far as in some innovations that might be influencing trends as we move forward?
That's a good question. So, I don't focus in my research on like, module,
Right, right.
efficiency changes or, things like that, but I guess I am following, virtual power plants and some new kind of like financing structures. In that regard, like I came across the company SolRight, who recently launched so it's a, under a third party ownership model.
Okay.
It's that, but leverages virtual power plant revenue. So it does require that customers install a battery as well. So, you know, they're able to provide, you know, more affordable PPA rates for customers upfront because they're able to leverage virtual power plant revenue, you know, with their battery.
Well, that's such a baited question. I'm going to go there. So what are your thoughts on virtual power plants? And not everybody knows. So maybe if you could just give us a quick update, what a virtual power plants are. And then I'd like to hear your opinion too.
Yeah,
I have mine and I'll share it, but let's see yours first. Okay.
Definitely. Yeah. So it's an aggregation of distributed energy resources. So, you know, solar storage, smart thermostats, things like that. So I know, you know, specifically with this like new TPO financing model I mentioned, I think it's interesting that, you know, customers are able to get more affordable rates just by, you know, allowing the battery company Sonnen to, you know, dispatch their battery and, you know, control it for them. With some customers aren't, you know, comfortable with that, but I don't know. I'm hearing it more and more in the news. I'm kind of curious how it will keep evolving over the next few years, but it seems like there's a lot of opportunity with it.
Well, I and I'll throw mine out there. Okay.
Okay.
So one of my issues with it, and I'll just give my own personal example. Okay. So I spend $50,000 to put rooftop on my house, right? And now I've added a little wind generator. So I spent another $5,000. And then I throw a battery in there, and that might cost me $15,000 to $25,000. How big? And then I might throw in my bidirectional Ford F-150 to basically be my extra battery kind of thing. So I get a 2-for-1. Well, I spent all this money. Okay. So do I want somebody else controlling it? I don't know. But I used public dollars because I got tax credits. So that's the other side of that coin. So I don't know. I get a little mixed on that. I mean, the old school of me is, hey, I bought it. Leave me alone, right? I made the investment. But then there's a little bit of the altruistic. Well, okay. So I took advantage of public dollars to get the tax credits to get these. So am I being a bad citizen if I don't share?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends also, like, you know, how much revenue you could make from participating in the VPP too.
Well, in my opinion, I'd like to get your thought on this. With more and more solar being adopted, and we'll come back and talk about those rates in a minute, there is going to be severe economic pressure on the infrastructure for the utility companies that are delivering electricity to us if they don't have the revenue. That, you know, my example is, hey, when I did solar 3 years ago, I could pick to get a check for my excess energy. Well, I haven't had any electrical bills, and I get a check every month. Now, it's not a giant check, but it's a check, right? But that means that Xcel is not, or my local provider Xcel, they're not making money from me. And the more of those customers pop up, that starts great economic pressure because it's a model we can't sustain. And, you know, I think some people are doing some interesting things. We have an example here locally in Colorado, Holy Cross utility. They're trying to do some things. So what are your thoughts? I mean, do you think we're going to have to change the business model for those utility companies in order, because we kind of have a conflict. You don't want people to not do distributed, you know, generation of power, but you also don't want to make it so there's nobody here to sustain the grid and delivery.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, there are still some options. Like, I know utilities have made changes where there is like monthly fixed charges where your solar production can't offset those charges.
Right.
So, you know, that would be an option for a utility. So, you know, we see utilities kind of experimenting and thinking about this and slowly making changes. Obviously, California was pretty extreme, but it'll be interesting to see kind of how many utilities follow suit.
Yeah, I don't know. I have mixed emotions because I, as an independent thinker and as an independent, you know, I have generate my own power. Yeah, I want that freedom and that independence. I mean, we had an interesting example here in our backyard just recently where The wind was blowing, and if anybody remembers back in 2021, we had that horrible fire here where electrical lines went down, sparked a fire, wiped out 1,100 buildings, homes, and stuff. So the power company, in a preemptive move, shut the power off for 55,000 customers. Well, this is the odd part of that. It took them more than 3 days to get some of that back up, and that was a purposeful shutdown. Okay. So, okay, I get it. It was an important thing, but I want to be independent of those types of events. So, I don't know. It's a mixed bag.
Yeah,
So,
did you lose power
I
during that?
didn't. I didn't. I
Okay.
was fortunate enough. We did get a email notification that it was potential that they could expand the area, but no, I didn't. But I know of many people who lost all the food in their refrigerators and freezers after a certain amount of days, or they were running around taking their frozen stuff over to friends and family who didn't. And then I don't know, there's a lot of stories on that. So, because I think a lot of people who are going or choosing to take solar on are doing it for somewhat of an independence attribute kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's where the battery comes in,
Yes.
too.
Yeah, it really does. So, what do you think of what's 24 look like? I know you're getting close to looking at some reports. What's the market look like? And then I want to talk adoption rates across the country too, because there's some big
Sure.
gaps.
Definitely. So, like I was saying with 2023, we started to hear of, impact, the impact of interest rates on sales volumes in a lot
Sure.
of states. So those first 3 quarters of the year were really strong, both in California and at a national level too. We did
Okay.
see a dip in Q4 2023, first as a result of, California installers started to wrap up their backlogs, from sales made under NEM 2.0. And then also just starting to see more of the impact of interest rates on installation volumes, just because of that lag that I mentioned. So in 2024, we're actually expecting a 13% contraction in the national
Okay.
market. So,
Okay.
this would be the first annual contraction since about 2017. We've seen, I think 2023 was the fifth consecutive record
Growth.
year for
Right.
residential solar, which is crazy. So
Okay.
2024 would be the first annual contraction, and it's kind of driven by those two main factors. One, California, there's this adjustment to selling solar under this new net billing structure. So
Yep.
we're expecting a 40% contraction in the
In
state.
wow.
And
Okay.
then just with other states, just interest rates haven't come down yet, so
No.
just continuing to feel that sales slowdown and it being reflected in installations. I think I'm starting to hear some more signs of optimism and positivity recently, just in terms of sales starting to bounce back, but we may not actually see the impact of that on installation volumes till the very end of the year.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. Now I come out of technology, traditional software and hardware, but I consider solar software and hardware because that's what it is. All right. So one of the things that we see is we see these cycles of innovation that speed up and slow down. But when you look at the combined issues of the interest rates and then some of the things that are happening policy-wise, it makes the industry somewhat what I would call fragile, okay? Because economic adopters weigh heavily on tax credits at both the state and federal level, even some cities. Denver's doing some things now, Portland. I've always thought that it's a little bit of a fragile industry because we're so reliant on tax credits. Now, there's nothing that we can do on an individual basis to impact inflation and interest rates. And unfortunately, from what I keep reading, I always pay attention to the markets, doesn't look like interest rates are going to move very much until maybe the end of the year. We're in it, we're in an election cycle and all those things, those contribute. So, I mean, am I crazy for thinking that the industry is a little fragile because, I mean, we're so dependent on tax credits?
That's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it in that way. And I joined or started in the solar industry at kind of an interesting time in July 2022, right
Okay.
before the Inflation Reduction Act passed
Right.
and went into effect. So, I had kind of was expecting before the IRA passed, we were expecting the ITC to phase down and end.
Right.
So, I'd gotten feedback from, talking to installers in the industry that that creates a bit of urgency for
Sure.
sales. And they're like, take advantage of it before it
Right,
goes
before it
away.
goes away. But then it was extended with the IRA.
Exactly. So increased and extended. So, I'm not sure about the fragility part of it, but yeah, now, that could be contributing to some lower demand as well, where we don't have that urgency. It's set at 30% for at least the next 8 years. I believe it's through 2032, if I
It is through
remember.
2032. I think it's interesting. We live in a country where there's a lot of political dynamics where policies change really quickly. There is always the potential if we have an administration change that thinks differently, and I don't get into the politics of it, that we could see a change with that. They can cancel those things and say we're going to end those programs. However, I don't think that's a very popular idea. So I think we're safe until 2032. But there's always that chance. And so the reason why I somewhat talk about it being a fragile industry is because we are so tied to policy. Okay. Now,
Definitely.
in previous lives, when I was in software and hardware, price dropping actually made things not fragile. Okay. So one of the things right now is it's not inexpensive to get into solar, it takes a large investment. So as competition increases and then prices will come down, then the reliance on tax credits and interest rates won't be as impactful as they are.
Definitely.
That's why I take a look at that. So I don't know. It's an interesting time because I look at the industry from a different lens because I've kind of been through the cycles where, back in the 90s when like Dell was producing new laptops, they had a life expectancy of 9 months. And then
Wow,
they had to
that's
have
crazy.
another product out. Well, I'm seeing right now just all these innovations that are taking place. I mean, you look at the intelligent control panels and what like things like what Tesla has done with its new inverters and just things are on fire. So I think that's going to create a lot of price drops because there's more and more competition. Okay.
Definitely. And yeah, I just about your point of, the industry being fragile. I see that in other ways, leading up to, when interest rates really started to go up, it was, low financing rate era,
Yeah.
the loan segment was booming, lots of competition. And then, things really took a turn at the end of 2022. And now, just talking to a lot of installers with sales being down, it's a tough time for them. And so they maybe aren't like expanding to new states. They've really had to like look internally, focus on, being a lot more efficient and all
Right.
that. And so I think that those companies that have been able to do that are, have good practices, are protecting consumers, all that. Like, I think those companies will survive this and be okay. But I think we've already seen some of the bad actors,
Fall
kind
out.
of weeded out
Yeah.
over the past year.
Okay, so let's change gears a little bit. What are the installation rates look at there? Look at across the states because it's different regionally. I mean, California has this giant adoption rate compared to other states.
Yeah.
So, can you help us paint the landscape a little bit about installation rates that you've seen across historically? And
Yeah, let's see. So yeah, looking back at 2023, I mean, nationally, the penetration rate was 7%.
7%. Okay.
Yep. So that's also assuming that, only there are some homes that maybe aren't suitable for rooftop solar. So
Sure.
we kind of take that into account. But yeah, it's still quite low.
Quite low. Okay. And the highest being California. What are they around? Mid 20s, is it?
Let's see. So California actually isn't the highest. California is about a little over 30%.
Okay.
Hawaii is one of the
Oh, that's right.
highest.
It's
Yeah,
easy to forget.
about 45%. Yep.
Wow. Okay. 45%. Well, sun's always shining in Hawaii, isn't it? Except when it's torrential rain. Okay. So that's nice to know. Because, when you're out in there, you hear all these numbers thrown around, and the detractors are saying it's lower. The people who are overzealous supporters might say it's higher because they might just quote some of these other things. But do you see a point in the marketplace coming up when that either, again, we already talked about the headwinds a little bit, but do you see a saturation point where it really starts to make a impact with the utility companies?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I guess generally how Wood Mackenzie thinks about it, once we get to penetration levels of, 20 to 30%, I'd say we expect to see a slowdown. Of course, not every
Sure.
state follows that trajectory, but yeah, in my research recently and just, reading the news, I hear the residential solar industry is on the verge of collapse. Like, this is the end of it.
Right.
And, just looking at the penetration numbers, it's only 7%. So there's still a ways to go.
Yeah. I think it's a long ways to go. If you look at technology adoption life cycles, and I know they're
Sure.
also, if you look at the innovations that are happening in bifacial, cells, some of these things, we're going to see massive gains, which would then increase the market size, addressable market size, because you may not need as much roof space to put those
Definitely.
on. Okay.
Yeah.
Are there any trends that you're keeping track of right now in as far as the overall comparison between anything that's done community and how that's impacting? I mean, are there any things that are happening there from, I know you focus in residential, but is that being it? Because we're seeing more and more solar farms, come up, community,
Yeah.
large goes up. Is that impacting the market at all for residential?
That's a good question. So, I mean, it's great that community solar is an option, for those
Right.
customers who are can't put solar on their roof or renting or something like that. They can still benefit from
Right.
bill savings. Just thinking of, I guess, some trends in like community solar, commercial solar. I know that, the project sizes are a bit bigger on average than a residential system. And I know that there's been a lot of like interconnection slowdowns, and that's kind of been
Yeah.
stagnating the market, or some of the developers have had challenges in more mature markets. But I know with community solar, it's really dependent, probably even more so than residential solar, on policy, federal and state
Yes,
policy,
yes.
just creating that program structure. So I know my colleague Caitlin, who focuses on community solar, is really excited to dig into those Solar for All awards that will have an impact on the sector.
Yeah, for those who haven't been tracking this, then the people have lives, not like me, who look at all this time. Yesterday it was, or day before, the EPA announced the awarding of 60 entities for the Solar for All. So it was $7 billion, and it's mostly state agencies and then tribal nations that got these awards. But there's not a lot of details out on how that's going to be implemented. It's identified for underserved communities and lower income, mid to lower income. But I'm interested to see what that what those levels are, how they're going to work, if they're going to vet, installers, and there's a lot of details from that. I mean, it's a great award. I think it's awesome that it helps them doing that, but I think there's a lot of stuff to be sorted out on that. So I'm sure you've been tracking that, right?
Yeah, I honestly still need to dig into it a little bit more, and we'll be awaiting more details
Well,
on
I can tell you this, I've been hunting and there isn't really
it.
any details.
Yeah.
If you go out to the EPA's website, epa.gov, and go look at their stuff, the awardees, everybody that applied for it, I mean, this stuff that their descriptions, it's all apple pie and motherhood type descriptions. I mean, there's no details. I
Yeah.
mean, it's like, well, we're going to serve under community. Well, okay, how are you going to do that? Because one of my concerns is in that space is, all right, so I have lower income families. Great, we're going to help them out. But how many of them own a home? Because the grants are specifically for rooftop solar. And so what is the homeowner percentage of those in that in those income brackets? And
Yeah, it's a good
so
question.
that's a there's a lot of money being put forward, but who can qualify? You know, so it's really interesting to see what happens. And I don't know, and from what I understand, and I could be wrong because I am all the time. Well, not all the time. It's just I'm married. I know how to be wrong, right? So my wife is wonderful. She puts up with my nonsense. But the thing of it is, those funds aren't going to be available to the end of the year, most likely, just because the government doesn't do anything quickly. So in my perspective, I don't know how much it's really going to impact 2024.
Yeah, I mean, that reminds me, some of the provisions under the Inflation Reduction Act, like the three additional investment tax credit adders. You know, there
Okay.
was a ton of excitement around those, but we're with some of the ITC adders, we're only starting to see kind of like those benefits. And with other adders, we're still waiting on full guidance, so it takes a while
Takes
to
a while.
actually see the impact.
Well, that's a great segue. Can you just give us a brief summary of those three adders that have come out or been
Yeah,
announced?
so I guess to zoom out a little bit, with the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act, we already talked about how one of the benefits to residential solar is that the IRA increased and extended the investment tax credit. So that is available whether the customer purchases the solar, through cash or
Right.
through financing
Financing.
through a loan. And so the customer would be eligible for that tax credit, but it is also available through third-party ownership, like a lease or a PPA. But the caveat is that the third-party owner receives that tax credit, not the
Correct.
homeowner.
Not the homeowner.
So anyway, yeah, to answer your question, the IRA also created three additional tax credit adders, so to
Okay.
speak. So there's three of them. They're each worth an additional 10% on top of the 30%
Okay.
ITC. And so there's domestic content, energy communities, and the low income communities
Okay.
adder. So I can get into them if you
Let's
want.
talk for about that. Okay, so domestic content. So help our listeners understand that.
Yeah, so that is the adder that I was alluding to. We're still waiting on final
On final
guidance.
details, okay.
Yep. So that would someone would qualify for that if I believe the rules are if 40% of the solar system is manufactured in the
In
US.
the US.
So yeah, still waiting on all the specific
Parameters,
details there.
right. Okay. Now, with the domestic content, does that also reference the livable wage aspect of that too?
That's a good question. I don't believe that that applies.
Okay. Because I know there's been talk or a lot of policy discussions going on about, okay, you get 10% for domestic content. Then if your system's being delivered by licensed and livable wage professionals, that there's additional for that.
Yes, so I believe that's with the prevailing wage and
Prevailing
apprenticeship
wage. Yep.
requirements. And so I haven't focused on that as much in my research just because I believe that only applies to projects above 1 megawatt.
Above 1 megawatt. Okay. Do you think there's any chance that that'll dip down into residential?
Don't believe so, but you
Okay.
never know.
Okay. All right. So we talked about the 10% for domestic content. What's next?
So for energy communities, and I guess also to zoom out, these three 10% ITC adders are only eligible are available for the third party owned segment. So, you know, a customer, you know, if, for example, their solar system somehow, you know, met the domestic content requirement, they would not be eligible to receive that extra 10%. It's only available just under the tax code
To the
through to the,
provider.
yep, exactly.
Okay.
So for energy communities, I believe the Treasury provided a map of specific qualifying areas. There's like a few different requirements. I think, you know, located in a coal plant closure
Sure.
area. It's, you know, based on census tract. I don't have all the details off the top of my head. But essentially, there's a map with qualifying areas across the country. So if a project is located within that qualifying area, then it would qualify for the additional 10%. And that one, you know, based on feedback I've gotten, is the easiest one to qualify for just because there's no application process. We've gotten all the guidance. Those qualifying areas do change year to year. But yeah, so far, like companies I've talked to in 2023 were already able to qualify projects for it.
Qualify projects for it. That helps everyone. I mean, it helps those companies, and then it does help the consumer who may not have, because one of the challenges that I see, some consumers may not have enough tax liability to off for the credits to offset, no matter
Definitely.
how far you're going to roll those out. And so they just, incomes may not set that.
Yeah, I guess the question still is, so let's say, you know, that third party ownership provider does qualify the project for the ITC. So it's that extra 10%. How much of that benefit are they passing on to the installer? And then how much of the benefit is passed on to the customer?
I'm going to guess not a whole lot, just knowing
Yeah.
capitalism, just, no judgments there. But that's an interesting thing to examine. Okay, so now I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. What's a popular myth about residential solar that most people don't know? Or can you be a myth buster here for us on an
Ooh,
angle?
that is a good question. Trying to
Tick-tock,
think.
tick-tock. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, I guess one thing would be the price, maybe. Like, you know, it's certainly expensive, and it of course depends on you know, where you live. But with the available with the ITC, you know, state credits as well, you know, it could be a lot more affordable than you think. But depends on the area.
Depends on that. Okay. Well, I think that's one. I think there's a lot of, I hate the term misinformation. I just think there's a lot of incorrect information out there. And the more people can get educated, the better decisions they can make. Because I know
Definitely.
when I embarked on my journey to put solar on my place 3 years ago, as soon as I got all the education, it was a straightforward decision for, in my use case. Okay. But I think there's just a lot of confusion, fear, uncertainty, doubt type of things that people may not be impacting as fast as that.
Yeah, I'm curious, did you have like an installer, you know, in mind that you wanted to work with, or did you kind of, you know, do your own research?
Well, I succumbed to a person who knocked on my door.
I see. Gotcha.
Okay. And again, they're out there. There's nothing, wrong about that. But then, and that person's company was not vertically integrated or what we call EPC. And so they were a sales organization. And then we had a national installation company did that. My issue with it, and I think this is a lot of people's experience, was the minute the contract was this signed, my solar rep disappeared. I mean, it was, and it happens. And I guess I should have said, been thinking it through when he said, "Well, I'm going to be in Moab the next couple months." And so, okay, shame on me for the way I purchased that. But what I did do and stop, drop, and roll a little bit when through my process is I did start to research. Okay. But then I took the easy way out because the guy came by and he I felt he was honest and he did a good job. But it wasn't the best experience end to end just because I had questions and it wasn't made clear to me where those questions needed to be directed. And I think that's a challenge. I think that's a headwind. And we're starting to see a lot of policy change as far as how solar is brought to the market with employees versus 1099. I mean, Nevada's taken some juncture there, which has been, I think, good for the industry. Is that a trend you think we're going to continue to see, or?
Definitely. Yeah. So I actually focused on Nevada in our most recent U.S. solar market insight report last quarter.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we are expecting a contraction in the Nevada market just as, you know, a result of that transition. I think it will probably be a more like temporary contraction. Then we'll see, you know, growth after that, because Nevada is a strong state for residential solar. But yes, I've definitely heard of that being proposed in other states.
Yeah, well, I won't get on a soapbox, but I'm part of a consortium here in Colorado with a company, a technology provider using AI. It's called Mentis Technologies. And they're on a mission to help self-license the industry.
Gotcha.
So what's kind of neat is if you work with their technology, you register your it's down to the sales representative layer. You register your representative, they do a voice sample, and then when they're engaged with the customer, they can use it and say, hey, we're licensed. Okay. And so an initial phone call with the customer, it will validate their licensing.
That's great.
And so it's too late in the legislative cycles this year in Colorado, but I'm part of a consortium that's trying to self-license the industry to kind of get rid of the bad apples. And
definitely,
I think it's important because, you know, there are way too many stories of people who had bad experiences with the bad actors, you know, the two boys, a dog and a ladder type companies that appear. Is there anything that you guys pay attention in that perspective of the marketplace at Wood Mackenzie?
Yeah, so I guess just like anecdotally, I've been hearing about a lot more concern for consumer protection. You know, there was a recent Time magazine article that came out, you know, a few months ago, just kind of like highlighting some of the deceptive marketing practices. So I think that we're seeing a bigger push for consumer protection right now. And, you know, maybe that's tied into just, you know, this kind of like slowdown, where what I've been saying is that it's a reset for the residential solar industry this year. Like I said, companies are focusing on, you know, efficiencies, doing things right. So I think, you know, we'll see more and more of a focus on that this year. I know, you know, my colleagues have also published a report on customer acquisition trends. And so, you know, it's interesting that door-to-door sales is still such a huge way
huge element
to sell residential solar compared to, you know, talking to colleagues in Europe, where, you know, digitalization is a lot different there for residential solar. So, you know, COVID probably put a temporary like halt on that, but we're still seeing that as the most popular way to sell solar.
Yeah, it is. And I understand the business model, because it's an easy way for people to get people who are willing to hustle, you know, installers willing to hustle. You know, the money's really good for the people who are doing, you know, door knocking and canvassing, but the turnover rate's really high, because that's difficult, you know, to go knock on someone's door and ask them to spend $25,000 to $50,000 is, you know, you wouldn't sell cars that way. I mean, you know, there's a lot of examples. So, you know, I think the jury's out on that a little bit. I understand both sides of that, but my biggest concern is the worry for the consumer, you know, to protect that, you know, protect them. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about installation trends. Any other trends that you see coming up over the next 3 years that you think are going to be impactful?
Yeah, so we've touched on this a little bit, but a big part of my research is looking at the financing landscape.
Right.
And so I look at, in residential solar, the breakout of customer ownership segment, like I said, like loan and cash purchases versus third party ownership.
Right.
And so it's interesting that, you know, over the past 5 years, the loan segment has really dominated.
Yes.
Reached, I think, 70% market share in 2022. And, you know, that really drove the residential solar market to new levels. Like we talked about, it was the fifth consecutive record year for the residential solar market in 2023. But with high interest rates, that's really like shaken up the financing landscape. So it's interesting that while third-party ownership was really popular back in, let's say, like 2015, you know, it really has consecutively declined over the past few years. I think 2022, it was like 20% market share. But with interest rates shaking things up, you know, we've seen loan volumes for various, you know, large lenders really decline in 2023 and expected to decline this year. And so we're seeing kind of a slow resurgence from the TPO segment. And I think part of it could just be, you know, product like optionality for customers. Like, okay, so, you know, financing rates for loans have gone up. Customers were used to seeing really low interest rates, and now they're seeing like an 8.99 product. And so that's much less appealing. They know interest rates are eventually going to come down. So they're, you know, just want to wait, or they look to third-party ownership as another option, like maybe because of the tax liability reason you mentioned. Maybe they're able to get better savings depending on the state and utility. So yeah, because of that, we're expecting a lot more third-party ownership growth over the next few years and expecting to see the segment's market share really increase back up to, I think, about 40% over the next few years. So we still think that the loan segment is going to be the majority, just because there's always going to be customers who want to own their system and are maybe confused by the third-party ownership model.
Well, one of the things I look at as being a technology geek like I am, and geek is an affectionate term, anybody out there that you think that, is technology refresh. So I've talked a little bit about the innovation cycles just going so fast and such a frenzy, and you just see so many things happening and, you know, systems being integrated to smart systems in the home, and there's just a lot. And so one thing that I kind of always look at as being a geek guy that was always looking at is, if I own my technology, then I have a better options to refresh those that technology.
True.
Because I'm not in a lease, I'm not in a PPA, I'm not, you know, dependent on someone else. So, wow, if there's a breakthrough in panels and it doubles or 25%, I can look at the financial analysis and replace them. Or, you know, the next gizmo company comes up with a way better, you know, house controller or inverters or yada, yada, yada. So I think what's going to be interesting from my perspective, you know, I don't research this as deep as you do, but I think it's going to be interesting to see as more education comes to the table, you know, as we start to spread that knowledge base and then more technology is available. I think it's going to be interesting how much technology refresh is going to be part of the buying process and decision making.
Definitely. You
know, I think it's really, I don't know if I may be overplaying that just because I come at it from a geek perspective, but you know, I don't want to buy panels this year that are obsolete in 2 or 3 years. Right.
Definitely. I know like one of the draws towards the TPO model could be that I think typically, you know, warranty and maintenance is included for, let's say, 25 years.
Right.
So, you know, there could be customers who are like, I don't want to deal with it if something, you know, goes wrong. So they have that guarantee.
Well, it's a lot of interesting dynamics at play. Anything else you want to share with our listeners today as far as, you know, what's happening in residential solar? I mean, it's a pretty complex market, you know, a lot of things happening.
Yeah, I'd say 2023 and 2024 are definitely going to be, you know, unique years when we look back. I think after that, we are expecting, you know, recovery in 2025 and continued growth, you know, over the next 10 years. So I think this is kind of just, like I said, a reset for the industry, and we are going to see return to growth.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I tell you, I get up every day and pray for lower interest rates.
Yeah.
Interest rates. Makes
soon
such
enough
a big difference. Well, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast today and helping us understand. Now, one thing we forgot to do real quick, but I would want to make sure that we address this. Tell us a little bit more about Wood Mackenzie and how you guys are positioned and who your customers are, and just a little bit more about that, because there's not a whole lot of people that probably Wood Mackenzie is not a household name for them.
Yeah, sure. So overall, Wood Mackenzie is a research and consulting firm. So on the research side, you know, we have research teams all over the world covering various technologies. You know, as we talked about, I focus on distributed solar. So for my team specifically, we publish research reports with insights into, you know, state solar markets by segment. We provide analysis on market size, forecasts, policies, and competitive landscape. So, you know, providing companies with information and market intel to make business decisions. So we have a really wide array of clients, I'd say, installers, developers, financing and investment firms, manufacturers. So, yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Well, it's good to know. I think the world of you folks. I mean, I do a lot of research on my own, and I'm always looking to who are the better players. And I still think you guys are the top of the list there, top shelf from my perspective. So
thank you.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on, and I appreciate all the information you've shared, and we've bantered around a little bit of perspectives and stuff. And I think it's going to be really interesting. You know, we know the headwinds, but the tailwinds too are the fact that knowledge is really starting to grow. And so I think that there's some really positive things there as we do that. Okay.
For sure.
So the last question I ask my guests, okay, and this was something I refreshed from another podcast that I did. You know, everybody has a bucket list, all right? So things that they want to do, you know, I want to climb Mount Everest or, you know, whatever it happens to be, right? But there's always an opposite to everything in the world, all right? So you might have your bucket list of things you want to do, but there's a list over here that rhymes with bucket, starts with the letter F, and these are things you have no intention or interest of ever doing, okay? So for me, I'll give you time to ponder this.
Okay.
So for me, like, remember the old Indiana Jones where he goes down into the pyramid area and there's all these snakes? Well, me and snakes were not friends. I'm not crawling into a box with a bunch of snakes, okay? So that's something. I have no interest to ever going back to Mexico City. I don't want to explain
I
that,
see.
But yeah, okay. So I've given you a couple examples. What might be on Zoe's effort list? Something you never want to do or have no interest in?
That's a good question.
See, I stumped her. I stumped her.
This is quite random, but I think scuba diving. I don't know. I just
Okay.
really don't have any interest in doing that. I feel like I've heard horror stories, so.
Yeah, the fact that you go down, and I would probably add that one to my list because
Yeah.
I'm not, I mean, especially full under with tank and gear and stuff.
Yeah.
One, you might feel like fish food of something very big that could eat you. And then number two, what if something on the equipment breaks and I can't breathe? Ah, that's crazy.
Exactly. You never know.
Well, thanks for coming on. We get to know you a little bit there. And so I will get you back and we'll see what the trends look probably later in the year to see what things look like in the marketplace. And
Yeah.
well, I'm just praying for better interest rates so we can keep some of this momentum going. So.
Definitely. Well, thanks for having me on, Rex. I
All right.
appreciate it.
Okay, everyone. Thank you. That'll wrap up this episode. Glad to have Zoe on and have her share her thoughts and interests and time and her bucket list item. Or no, the other list item. And we appreciate her coming on. So until next time, we will always remind people, don't forget to subscribe and hit the notification if you are on the video platforms. And then if you're following us on the podcast platforms, don't forget to follow. Gosh, that's a double. So until next time, I will say what I always say, thanks and make it a great day.